Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Now, we tend to take our atmosphere for granted, but you don't need to tell me what would happen if we didn't have one. But the story of the air we breathe is also the story of human history. Sam Keane is the author of Caesar's Last Breath, the epic story of the air around us. Sam, good afternoon.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for talking to us today. When we take in a lungful of air, Sam, how much stuff is in there?
There's a lot of stuff in there. The air is made up of very tiny, small molecules, and every time you take a breath, you inhale about 25 sextillion of those molecules. So that's a 25 with 21 zeros after it. It's pretty much an unfathomably large number, really hard to wrap your head around how much that is, but obviously there's a lot of stuff in everything we breathe.
So that those 26 trillion molecules could have come from any part of the globe?
Yeah, it's a mix, actually. So when you exhale, you breathe something back out, mostly nitrogen that you're exhaling, nitrogen molecules, and eventually those get spread around the entire globe after maybe a year or two. And actually, the title of the book, Caesar's Last Breath, refers to this sort of thought experiment where people want to know, well, you know, is it possible then maybe you're breathing in a molecule that Julius Caesar exhaled when he was assassinated in Rome 2,000 years ago. And on the face of it, that seems almost impossible. You think, you know, it's just a breath. Like, it's blown away, it's disappeared by now. And a breath is so small compared to the entire atmosphere. But it turns out, if you do the math, there are enough of those molecules as 25 sextillion, where you're almost certainly breathing in one molecule that Julius Caesar breathed every single time you take a breath. So it kind of gives you that connection to the past through the atmosphere that you don't really think about.
Now, I mean, we then statistically it's possible we're breathing in a molecule a Julius Caesar breathed in. Is it possible we're breathing in a molecule formerly owned by Julius Caesar, if you see what I mean?
In his body? Yeah, that's also possible. I talk in the book about actually people who, you know, have been caught in volcanoes and things and whose bodies basically vaporized instantly, turned into a gas instantly, and their bodies are probably up in the air. We might be inhaling little bits of their bodies as well. So, yeah, you can talk about Caesar. You can talk about other people. In fact, you can talk about a connection to any person who's ever lived in the history of the planet. You know, I've had people say, you know, it really moved them when they talked about thinking about, you know, a loved one that they lost, that they still had that connection with them through the air that they're breathing. It kind of touched and comforted them.
Yeah, and actually, just to let people know, that example that you give, it's from the Mount St. Helens eruption, is a guy, ironically called Harry Truman, who refused to get off Mount St. Helens because he didn't believe it was going to erupt. Why didn't he believe it?
Well, he was sort of being stubborn and convincing himself that Mount St. Helens wasn't going to blow. He'd been a rum runner, a bootlegger during Prohibition, and had run up into the mountains of Washington State in the United States to hide from gangsters, basically. Found out he loved the area, opened a campground there, and ended up marrying someone, the love of his life, and they managed this campground together. And unfortunately, a few years before the eruption, she died, and he was very depressed about it, didn't want to leave where they'd been together, basically where they'd had those great years of their life. And so when Mount St. Helens started to threaten to blow, he refused to believe it, refused to get off the mountain. And for a while, it looked like he might be correct, because the mountain sort of seemed like it was quieting down a little bit. But then suddenly it blew, and as far as we know, he was probably the first person to die in that eruption, because he was so close to the summit of the mountain. And as I said, his body basically vaporized instantly and went up into a gas in the atmosphere.
God, that's very sad. Our scientific understanding of air and its constituent parts, is that relatively recent?
It is recent in terms of long human history, because for a long time, people didn't quite understand what the air was, or they maybe thought it was some sort of like a spiritual substance. they didn't quite grasp that it was a material substance, that there's molecules in it, there's matter in it, it's a thing, it can do work, you can use it to blow things apart or steam engines, do work like that. So it wasn't really until the early 1700s, and especially the late 1700s, that we really understood that air existed and was a thing. Before that, people really didn't grasp what the air was. It was sort of like if you asked a fish what water is, a fish probably wouldn't quite grasp what it was because they spend all their time immersed in it. Human beings were kind of in the same relationship with air.
Right. And so, well, people knew air existed, or did they?
Well, it's kind of a question. It's a little hard to put yourself back into their mind and understand what they really thought existed. They definitely didn't know that, you know, we were breathing something important. We were getting this molecule oxygen in. They didn't understand that air came from, you know, volcanoes and living things, and that we had to breathe this stuff in or we would die. They couldn't quite, you know, they didn't have the tools and the theories to understand quite what it was. So it's a little hard to put yourself back in that mindset.
Yeah, and going back to what we were talking about, the Caesar's last breath idea, Orla, one of our listeners, says, does that mean we're breathing the same breath as Hitler and Stalin or even Brad Pitt? So presumably the same thing applies.
The exact same math, the exact same theory applies. So yeah, you connect yourself with great people in the past or, you know, heroes that Brad Pitt or Confucius or whoever you want. But yeah, you also are connected with the awful people in history too. One of the few things that really connects us with everyone in the same way like that.
And Peter says, all I'm taking from this is that I'm forever breathing in the farts of every person who's ever lived. I'm now completely put off my lunch, says Peter. On that note, tell us something about Joseph Pujol.
Pujol, yes. The very famous petomaniac, or the fartiste, as they called him in Paris. He was a performer at the Moulin Rouge in Paris, late 1800s. Highest paid performer there, the most popular performer, and basically he did impressions by farting. So he would inhale air into his rectum, he would squeeze it back out, and he would do animal impressions, he would sing songs with it, he would blow out candles from a distance. So he had this really strange, unusual talent that he did on stage.
Yeah.
And you know, it sounds kind of lowbrow and silly, but he had a lot of big fans. Renoir, the painter, was a fan. Ravel, the composer. Freud loved him. The King of the Belgians came to see him once incognito. And there's really a lot of great science there if you read the chapter. The gas we pass is something we all think about. Maybe we're a little embarrassed about it, but we're all curious about it at the same time. And when you look at it, there's really a lot of interesting science going on. So it's kind of a fun, memorable way to look at this. And that's really what the book is. It's a collection of these fun, memorable stories to teach you a lot about the air you breathe.
And did anyone examine Joseph Pujol to see why he had this particularly spectacular ability?
It's a little strange. They wouldn't let doctors examine him at the end of his life. There was a lot of question about whether he was a fraud, whether he had concealed a bellows inside his coat or something like that. But he did get examined. Doctors found that it was legitimate. But no one ever at the end of his life examined him did an autopsy, basically, to see if there was something different about it. And in fact, one of his sons, after his father died, said, you know, we're not going to allow an autopsy because there are some things in life you just have to treat with a certain amount of reverence, was the quote he said. So a little ironic, but that's how he felt about it.
Sam, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That's Sam Keane, author of Caesar's Last Breath, The Epic Story of the Air Around Us. We're going to take a break after that. Rules for Mavericks.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.